It's time for the Million Pound Radio Show. Please welcome your hosts, Andy Hamilton and Nick Revel.
Thank you very much. Good evening. In tonight's show, we'll be asking, was the ETA bomb campaign in Spain a genuine terrorist strategy or just a plot to give Kate 82 weeks on the Costa Brava?
And we'll be looking at the Navy's new intelligent torpedo, which detects targets from 200 miles away, but is then too clever to blow itself up. And also, later in the show, we'll be focusing on Tarquin de Villiers. Hello, Tarquin.
Hello, Andy.
Now, Tarquin, you are chairman of the Dangerous Sports Society, aren't you? Now, what dangerous things have you done?
Well, last October, I parachuted off the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco.
Really, yeah.
In March, I walked on a tightrope across Niagara Falls.
Mm-hmm.
And most dangerous of all, last week, I played a Benny Hill video to a feminist encounter group.
And lived.
Yeah, but only just.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I can see that. Well, later on, live, simultaneously on Radio 4 and BBC One, Tarquin here will be hurling himself off the top of Broadcasting House on an elasticated harness. And we'll all be there, hoping he comes a terrible cropper and kills himself.
Well, we've just got some late news in. In a cabinet reshuffle, Edwina Curry MP has been made Minister Without Portfolio, and Teddy Taylor has been made Minister Without Sun Bingo. Andy, I believe you've been out on our behalf reviewing films this week.
Yeah, well, I've been trying to. I had a bit of trouble, actually. See, I went to my local cinema complex and I went up to the bookings counter and...
Yes?
Ticket, please.
Smoking or non-smoking? The seating plan's up there.
Right. I can't find... Where's non-smoking?
About 3 feet away from smoking.
Non-smoking, I suppose.
Crisp packet rustling or non-crisp packet rustling?
So, anyway, I went in, You know, sat down. You know, the ads came up.
Yeah.
There was one which was visually superb,
really?
You know? Full of subtle, knowing references to the early films of Eisenstein.
What was it for?
Pot noodles. Then came the jeans ads, you know, wear these jeans and catch lots of swordfish.
Oh, yeah.
So, then the film started. Not in English, totally incomprehensible.
What, no subtitles then?
Only for Sylvester Stallone. Now, you see, Stallone plays this world swimming champion, and he's up against this really dangerous rival, and the rival is...
Russian?
How did you know that? Have you seen it?
No, just a guess.
Oh, right. Well, anyway, in the final, right, Stallone has to swim with a broken leg, and the Russian's winning. Only he's cheating because Soviet microsurgeons have concealed a propeller inside his stomach. And anyway...
You enjoyed it, then?
Well, not really. You see, I was just sitting there watching the film and...
Excuse me, sir.
Yes?
I'm the manager. I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
Eh?
I've had a complaint from the other customers that you're not talking through this film.
Watching a film while we're having a good natter.
Typical, isn't it? One selfish person has to spoil it for everyone else.
Look, I mean...
I'm sorry, sir, but these people have paid good money to talk through this film.
Yeah, but I want to watch the film.
Then you should have got it out on video. This is a cinema, sir. If you want to stay, you will have to sit there and say, the one on the left was in Gorky Park over the best bits.
I'm on my own. I've got no one to talk to.
No problem, sir. I can fix that. Harrison, over here, would you?
Hello.
Hello.
Good film, innit?
Impossible to say.
It's a sex scene next. It's great. It's great. They copy that in a jacuzzi.
Really?
Of course, they're only acting, ain't they? Mind you, I wonder how he manages, know what I mean?
Manages?
Yeah. Well, if you was funding a new bar actress's breasts, right, in a jacuzzi, right... I mean, certain physiological changes would occur, wouldn't they?
I suppose so, yeah.
Male biology being what it is. Unless, of course, they deliberately employ impotent actors.
Oh, God.
Or maybe they put bromide in the jacuzzi. Yeah! Yeah, they can put bromide
Will
in the jacuzzi.
Will you shut up? And then you see... I am trying to watch the film.
All right, we warned you about that. Come on, out you go. Come on.
Anyway, now it's time for yet another world exclusive. You are about to hear the tape of a secret meeting at the headquarters of the SAS. Little cottage.
All right, Ben, stand easy.
Well, got a little problem. Got to get Her Majesty's government out of a little sticky mess. Opinion polls disastrous, blah, blah, blah. In other words, they've got to do something spectacular. Now, they have three options. One, change their policies. Two, hand out massive tax cuts. Or three, have a bloody good war. And obviously, that's the one they're going for.
Geronimo!
The question is, who do we have the war with? Well, tight budget this time. Got to go for somewhere nice and near. Needless to say, we can't have a war with France. No matter how much we may want to. So, Captain Parker and myself are going to talk you through Operation Iceland.
Question. Why Iceland? Answer, Iceland is very like the Falklands in its terrain. We can use the same equipment, same boots, same terminology.
We'll be doing plenty of yomping, including a sponsored yomp led by Ian Botham.
We wouldn't normally allow that, but the war needs the publicity.
So, here's the timetable for the war.
November 3rd, HMG calls snap election.
November 4th, Navy warship flying Icelandic colours, rams Grimsby trawler, sinks it and steals all its cod.
November 5th, the Sun prints banner headline, cod off.
November 6th... November 6th, up your ice hole.
November 7th, 10 a.m., task force leaves Grimsby with Prince Andrew prominently visible on bridge of flagship.
10 p.m., Prince Andrew is discreetly helicoptered back to Balmoral. Is replaced on ship's bridge by cardboard cutout.
And don't get the two mixed up.
Like you did last time.
November 8th, we occupy Reykjavik, take down Icelandic flag, live on Saturday Superstore.
November 10th, Prime Minister orders sinking of Icelandic Navy just to annoy Tam Dayal.
November 11th, Jim Davidson arrives to do show.
Icelanders rebel and are all transported to penal colony.
In Wales.
November 15th, Thanksgiving service. Actress employed to pretend to be Mrs. Thatcher weeps convincingly in full view of cameras.
Apparently BM's been practicing her weeping, but she still can't manage to do it without chopping up onions.
And that's just not on with the cameras, though.
November 17th, general election, Tories sweep back to power with majority of 412. SDP claim moral victory.
A world-shattering exclusive there. Now on the programme that cares, it's time for our career spot, where successful entrepreneurs give advice to those thinking of setting up their own business. And tonight's captain of industry is Joe Satterthwaite.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Joe Satterthwaite, undertaker. And a more secure profession you'll never find. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the tango, the foxtrot, the twist, all have come and gone, but the dance of death goes on forever. Yes, indeed, as I stand here talking to you, ladies and gentlemen, I think to myself, 400 potential customers. Some further up the queue than others. Good evening, madam. Here's my card. Not that I have a callous attitude to the job. Admittedly, news on the radio of a horrendous motorway pile-up in our vicinity did once prompt the wife to ask, "Now can we have that cruise in the Mediterranean, you promise me?" But no, a funeral is a sad occasion. But one thing's for sure, folk like a good drink after. Which prompted me one day to say to me partner Wallace, "Wallace, bung a trestle table and a crate of brown ale in the hearse. Set them up so folk can grab a swift one on their way out of the church." We used to lay on a barbecue as well, but it had unfortunate connotations at the crematorium. But yes, the catering side is really booming. I remember our first wedding, remember it well. 96 guests and we only forgot to set a place for the bride and groom. Well, we weren't used to the guest of honour being around after the service. With the catering, the key word is hygiene. That's why I always tell my staff, always wash your hands in between embalming the corpse and making the sandwiches. Because food poisoning is something to avoid. Unless trade's very slack. Only joking. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, when it's your turn to be the pièce de résistance on the menu of the earthworm's banquet, remember to get the best quality material for your casket, because as we say in the trade, the better the bed, the better the rest. Thank you and good night.
Later in the show, we'll be exposing the typing error that began the Iran-Iraq war.
And Derek Jameson will be telling us how everyone in Fleet Street is really cynical and immoral since he left.
That's right. Oh, wait. Hang on, Nick. There's a lady down the front shaking her head. Yep. What's the problem?
I'm Swedish.
Well, I'm sorry. There's nothing we can do about that.
I don't understand.
Don't understand what?
Well, just now, you said Fleet Street was cynical and immoral since Derek Jameson left. And really, you meant the opposite.
Yeah, well, that's called irony. We British like irony. It's sort of saying the opposite, you know, of what you mean.
Yeah, it's a sort of witty form of lying.
Yeah.
So it's lying. You find lying funny?
No, that was a joke. Just then.
Yeah. I mean, you must have jokes in Sweden.
No.
What? None at all?
Well, there was a joke going around Stockholm about reindeer. But it was banned by a declaration of Parliament in 1647.
Was it funny?
We don't know. Nobody understood it.
Well, look, if you could just bear with us, we'll explain the jokes to you after the show.
Please forgive me. I am Swedish.
Yes, stop apologising for being sweet, eh? No sense of humour.
Yeah. I hope she doesn't recognise the reindeer joke.
Yeah, me too. Time.
Excuse me,
Mushtaq, you're supposed to be on the door.
Yes, but Andy, the management have asked me to explain to our studio audience here the procedures to be followed in the event of fire.
Oh, right, safety drill.
Yes.
Right, okay.
Okay, listen very carefully, everyone. In the event of fire, this is what you do.
Well, thank you for that useful tip, Mushtaq. And now it's time for our children's story.
Hello, children. Once upon a time, there was a sheep and a pig, and they lived happily together on a lovely big farm. One day, the pig said,
"It's a great life on a farm, isn't it?"
"Yes, they really look after you."
"They give you lots of food to eat?"
"Lots of food to eat. Almost more than you can manage."
"Recently, the farmer's been absolutely stuffing me with food."
"Me too."
"You don't think there's a catch, do you?"
"Eh?"
"I just sometimes wonder if there's a catch, that's all."
"Nah."
"Insecurity, I expect. I had this horrible, puzzling dream last night. I dreamt that for some reason someone wrote the word Danish all over me."
Suddenly, along came the chicken.
"Hello,"
said the chicken.
"I've got some bad news for you. We're all going to be killed and then eaten."
"What?"
Sorry, it just sounds like David Steele.
"Well, of course, I'd completely dispute that." "I've got some bad news for you. We're all going to be killed and then eaten."
"What?"
said the sheep and the pig.
"It's true. I just heard the farmer talking. We're going to be slaughtered and sold to a Sainsbury's in Brentford."
"Oh, my God.
We must escape,"
said the sheep and the pig.
"We must dig a tunnel."
"And then head for Switzerland."
"No, better still, let's go on hunger strike. No one will want to eat us if we're thin and skinny, will they?"
"No, we'll just get turned into dog food or boiled down for glue. There's no escape unless..."
"Yes,"
said the sheep and the pig.
"Unless we change the system."
Well, the chicken, the sheep and the pig didn't want to be eaten, so they became urban terrorists. The sheep sheared himself and with the wool knitted them some nice black balaclavas. They broke free from the farm and began a war of liberation. Like all good terrorists, they started off by killing someone who'd done them no harm at all. His name was Barry. But unfortunately, Barry wasn't very important, so his death didn't get in the papers. The chicken was very cross.
"We need the oxygen of publicity to highlight our cause."
"I know,"
said the pig.
"Let's kidnap Bernard Matthews, kill him, and then stick an apple in his gob."
"Beautiful."
"No, I've got a better idea,"
said the chicken. And the next evening, in a Burnie Inn steakhouse in Slough...
This pork chop is very good. Mm.
"Good Lord, what do you know? A pig with a machine gun."
Without mercy, the chicken, the sheep and the pig mowed down the diners in the Burnie Inn, even those who were just having a salad. The next day, they napalmed Smithfield Market and 14 branches of Dewhurst's. The House of Commons was in uproar.
This gang is a bunch of animals. And must be brought to justice, tried, and then braised in a light Bearnaise sauce.
But soon, other farmyard animals were escaping and joining up with the chicken, the sheep and the pig. Their numbers swelled and their confidence grew until one day they seized control of the nuclear reactors at Sellafield.
All right, we know you can hear us in there. We've acceded to your demands.
Yes, the government had passed a bill making vegetarianism compulsory, except in Islington, where it was already compulsory. Inside Sellafield, all the farmyard animals were jubilant.
We've done it!
Well done, chicken!
Power to the poultry!
But while they were celebrating, a small washer came loose and all the nuclear reactors blew up. And everyone was engulfed by a huge nuclear explosion. Everyone except the Prime Minister, who said the levels were not significantly higher than background radiation. And everything went dark and cold, and nobody ever ate a chicken, a sheep, or a pig ever again. Well, some very hungry people did eat each other. Night-night, children.
And now, listeners, it's time for yet another broadcasting first here on the programme that breaks new ground, the million-pound radio show, Radio Phone Out. We're going to dial the number of a call box somewhere in Britain, and whoever answers will get a chance to air their views on any subject they wish, live on air.
Oh, Peter, darling. Hello. Bang on time, as usual. Oh, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you.
Hello?
Oh, let's go away together. Now, this evening. I can't bear all this secrecy anymore. Sneaking out to take phone calls at prearranged times. Telling George some story about nipping out for cigarettes. The fleeting moments of bliss.
Hello?
Oh, let's run away together. Please, darling. Peter, please, please.
Actually, I'm not Peter.
What?
No, my name's Nick Revel from the Million Pound Radio Show. I'm doing a live phone out.
Oh, yes, I've heard that programme. In fact, I was listening to it just now with my husband, George, before I...
Hello?
Oh, my God. He's going to kill me. What have you done? Oh, my God.
Hello?
You've destroyed me.
Well, listeners, there you have it. The excitement of live radio. Later on, we'll be asking key religious questions like, did Salome have John the Baptist killed just to get ahead? And...
You can't say that.
What?
You can't mock people's devoutly held religious beliefs like that.
Well, why not? We usually do. Last series, we did that joke about Jesus turning Hirondelle into wine, you know.
Yes, I know, but... I know.
And a whole sketch about Lazarus being raised from the dead and losing his no-claims bonus.
Yeah, but... Yeah, but you can't, you know, I mean...
What is it? What's up?
Well, it's just... I've become a Christian.
You're having me on, aren't you?
I'm not, no. Look at well-known Christians, right? There's an inner strength about them, like that tennis commentator, Gerald Williams.
Is he the one who looks like a hermaphrodite pixie?
That's the one, yeah.
He believes in God?
Yeah.
After what God did to him?
Exactly. Forgiveness, you see, forgiveness. It's inspiring. So anyway, I joined the local Christian union.
Yeah, that explains the Fair Isle sweater.
Mm. And I've got my new modern Bible. You know, well, it's not called the Bible. It's called, hey, take a look in here. I went to my first confession yesterday, and that was a new experience. Father, I want to confess.
Yes, my son. Tell me, are you new to the faith?
Yes, Father, yeah.
I thought so. You're supposed to be on the other side of the grill.
All right. Sorry. Right. Sorry, right. how do I begin?
Well, you tell me your sins.
Right. Well, when I was six, I...
Perhaps if we just concentrate on this last week. Have you committed, for example, the sin of lust?
Yes, yes, Father, I have. I watched the film The Deep on my video, and, well, Jacqueline Bissett is in it, and, well...
I understand, my son.
And I've been guilty of anger, Father. I shouted at Nick when he trod on one of my Sabutio players and...
Is The Deep the one where she climbs out of the water in a wetsuit?
Yeah, yes, yes, it is. Anger, Father.
Oh, yes, sorry.
Yes. As I say, Nick, I mean, it was a complete accident. I was playing...
And you've got it on video, you say?
Yeah, yes, but we are on to anger now, Father.
Oh, sorry, miles away. Any sins other than lust and anger? Not broken any of the Ten Commandments, for instance?
I can't remember all the Ten Commandments.
Well, look, here's a list.
Oh, cheers, right. Okay, right. Numbers 1, 3, 5 and 9, no. Numbers 2, 4, 6 and 10, yes. Number 8, yes, but not with an ox. And number 7, yes, but only once, and I'd been under a lot of stress at the time.
I did say, let's just concentrate on last week.
That was last week. So, tell it up, Father, what's the damage?
Confession is a spiritual cleansing, not a supermarket bill.
Sorry.
It comes to 30 Hail Marys.
30 Hail Marys? Is that all? Well, that's a bit of a diddle, isn't it?
Sorry?
Well, I mean, I thought at the very least I'd have to scourge myself with birch twigs or something, or, you know, go and massage some lepers. I mean, 30 Hail Marys? I only joined your lot for the guilt and the self-flagellation, you know, wallowing in a bit of the old self-content. I wish I'd turned Buddhist now. Or Muslim, or Hindu. Hindu, they whip themselves with little hooks now. That's what I call a religion.
Yes, but I mean...
30 Hail Marys, call that a penance?
All right, my son. If you want the gravest of heavy penances, take this.
Thank you, Father.
So what did he give you?
Season ticket for Arsenal.
And now it's time for our regular archive feature.
Come with us on the March of Time. The year is 1942, and Europe is in flames. In Germany, Nazi generals question the Führer's plan to invade Russia and eradicate the entire Slavonic race. But Hitler says it's all a matter of presentation. In Britain, thousands of young men are leaving for the battlefield, never to return. And in Grantham, a young Margaret Roberts is sending white feathers to any soldiers who come back alive. But at a research station called Los Alamos in America, an important breakthrough has been made by Professor Oppenheimer and his team.
Well, gentlemen, we have discovered the capacity to generate an inconceivably powerful nuclear explosion. But we must be sure, for the sake of all humanity, that we're right to create this awesome weapon. So, who can give me one indisputable reason why we should build this apocalyptic bomb?
Because we can?
That'll do.
And so the race to build the bomb began, codenamed the Manhattan Project because the bomb was almost as violent as downtown Manhattan. Meanwhile, the tide of the war was turning. American troops had arrived in England. Their arrival brought hope, joy, and unwanted pregnancies. Vera Lynn continued to sing, "There'll be bluebirds over the white cliffs of Dover," which was a bit unlikely as you don't get bluebirds in England, but there you go, she was probably on drugs. Back in Los Alamos, Pentagon chiefs congratulated Oppenheimer on his achievement.
Congratulations, Oppenheimer. Well done. Now listen, it's absolutely essential that we develop this bomb before the other side get it.
Absolutely, General.
Yeah, and as soon as we get it, we drop it on Moscow.
Yeah, Moscow. You mean Berlin, General.
Oh, yeah, Berlin. Sorry. I always get those two mixed up. They're so similar. You know, the two syllables there, yeah.
We developed this bomb on the understanding that it would be used to stop the Nazis.
Absolutely, Oppenheimer. Hey, come on, buddy. Lighten up, huh? Because it's to stop the Nazis. No sweat, okay?
Okay.
Yeah, we got to think of a name for this bomb. Say, I know. How about the Commie Killer?
President Roosevelt thought Commie Killer was a bad name for a bomb, so he decided to call it A-Bomb, which was nice and easy to remember. Consultations began with the Allies. Churchill wanted to drop it on Germany. The Pentagon wanted to hit Russia, so as a compromise, they dropped it on Japan. In Europe, the Axis powers were in hopeless disarray after the entire Italian army surrendered to a cub pack in Tripoli. and time marches on.
And that's all for tonight. Next week, we'll be looking at the hoard of ancient Roman coins, which archaeologists discovered in Max Bygrave's wallet.
And Mrs. Thatcher will be telling us about her favourite book, Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, which she always prefers reading back to front, as that way Scrooge ends up sticking to his principles. Thank you, and good night.
The Million Pound Radio Show was written and presented by Andy Hamilton and Nick Revel and featured Felicity Montague and Harry Enfield. It was produced by Paul Mayhew Archer.